Where are you supposed to be?
I don't know.
That must mean he has a good social life.
Yeah. What's a social life?
That's something that you'll want to get someday, but don't bother with it until you're done with this class.
So I've heard.
Yeah. Yeah, if you haven't got one yet, don't get one now. That would be a big mistake. Okay. I should give you a homework problem, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
So what homework number is this?
Five? No, a number less than 100.
Okay, well, let's find out. I think I have class notes over here. Okay, well, I think this is homework 7. Okay. So, do you want a book homework? Or do you want to make up a homework? I mean, I could give you one out of your textbook, because the Laplace transform stuff is set. What's that? Maybe you'd like that, because then you can look up the section number and find the formulas in the book.
That could actually be very,
very easy. And if all worse comes to worse, there's always the solutions manual, right? Yeah, I know. It's against the policy, but the engineering department. But anybody bring their book? Probably nobody did, right? Okay, so what shall I do? Let's do. Oh, we've got one. You guys are awesome, man. Okay. So, Laplace transforms. Fourier series, is it after that or before that? Maybe we have to look and see in the...
Oh, yeah.
Fourier series in chapter
18.
14. Yeah. 14. 14 looks like. 14 and 15. Okay, so that's page 5. Well, let's see, the exercises are 564. Okay.
It dumped all of it in there.
And this is took fluid mechanics.
Well, yeah. Is this Oasis or is this my room?
My room.
Oh.
Okay, well, 9, 16, and 27. That's chapter what, 14? Chapter 14, 9. What did I say? 27. 9, 16, 27, 14, semicolon. Okay. Okay, before I forget here, Bryson, bless his heart, he came up with a really great thing here. If you look at Stanford University, I stick some links on the wiki, and this guy right here, Brad Osgood, does a course, ENGR 263 or something there at Stanford. 251, or 261, yeah, 261, that's what it is, which is somewhat similar to this, okay, at least in the Fourier series part, okay, not for the Plus transforms and whatnot, but, you know, if you're still working on trying to figure out Fourier series, this guy is pretty good, and he has some notes. If you like learning things from the book, he has stuff that's even talks about the vector analogy, you know, and so you could look at that. And I put some links on the wiki. Let's see, I'll show you the wiki here. You look at linear network analysis. Down here, you see these links, Brad Osgood, Brad Osgood, Brad Osgood, okay? So those are some good links, you know, from his notes, which are really kind of more like a book than notes. You know, they're very nicely done. And he's revised them, you know, over several years, and so they're getting better. And, you know, all those students at Stanford are helping make them better. So, and besides that, you know, they opened up this class to the whole world, kind of, so... You know, probably there's people all over the world that are doing that. It was interesting. They had an interesting experiment last year at Stanford where they did a course in artificial intelligence.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, you could anybody could sign up, and they had 160,000 students sign up for this class. And they did this class. It was an online class, and. You know, they had people from all over the world in that class. And then I guess the professor thought it was such a success that he's starting his own university now. And, you know, his first class is how to write a search engine. And he's being funded by Google. And how do you suppose it's a free class, you know? And he's hoping to get 500,000 people in this one, okay? How do you suppose he funds that? No, I don't think so. Might be advertising, but I think Google is behind it, right? And what are they doing? They're doing what's called crowdsourcing, right? When he did that thing with 160,000 students, he had 248 perfect scores in the whole class, never missed a point, okay? So he had some very, very, very bright students in that class. And if he gets 500,000 people to sign up for this search engines class, right? He will end up with probably some very good ideas that are probably worth, you know, quite a bit to Google. And Google is glad to fund this.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So
count.
What's that?
Microseconds count.
Yeah, oh yeah, microseconds count for Google. You know? Nanoseconds count, yeah. I mean, in fact, they put in an undersea cable from Europe to New York.
Fiber optic.
Yeah, fiber optic cable. And you know what funded this fiber optic cable?
Stock market.
Stock market, just a few microseconds, you know, faster than the present thing, right? So if you can beat out the present cable, you can beat all those other guys in Europe because you got the information first, right?
So are we going to have hyperspeed fiber optic cable anytime soon?
I don't know. Talk to Fred Lybrand.
Accelerate photons faster than the speed of light.
Yeah. They actually go slower in cable than they go in free space.
Mm-hmm.
So
vacuum tubes.
yeah, you could do a vacuum cable. Okay, so let's remember what we were doing. Are there any questions about this this stuff here? Okay, so let's go back to the notes. And let's kind of remember what we were up to here. As I recall, we were working on this problem that was on the test. And we basically had the Fourier series for the square wave. And then from that, we came up with the Fourier series for the triangle wave by integrating it or putting it through a transfer function that has a frequency response 1 over j omega, right? And then what we wanted to do was put that through a transfer function, and we did one that was just a low-pass filter that would only give us the fundamental, the sine wave that goes like this. Actually, it's more like a cosine wave, right? Because here's zero, and it's going to be close to a peak there. But it turns out it's not perfectly a cosine wave because we can't get rid of all those harmonics, right? And furthermore, each one of those harmonics has a little bit different phase delay, right? And so when you add them all back up again, you have both sines and cosines. But if you're using this way of doing it, the complex Fourier series, that doesn't bother you, okay? Because the phase delay comes in these coefficients. So that was actually, it's better to do it this way than the way I had you do it on the exam. So the last part of the exam was answering this question, and the question was, what was the harmonic distortion, right? Now when you buy a stereo, you'll know what it means when it says you have 0.01% harmonic distortion, right? You'll know what that means right now. Okay, well, harmonic distortion, I'll call it HD, was defined as, what was it? It was defined as the power in the harmonics divided by the power in the fundamental times 100%. Okay, so that's the harmonic distortion in percent. So what we got to do is find the power, the average power in the harmonics. And the power in the harmonics is really the power in the whole wave minus the power in the fundamental, right? So we could write the HD is equal to the power total minus power fundamental . Now you know what I mean by the fundamental. That's just the frequency, the first, the n equals 1 term, right? And the n equals minus 1 term in that guy right there. And then divided by the power in the fundamental. Okay, well, it looks like what we need to do is we need to figure out what power is, right? So average power is equal to, it would be 1 over t, the integral of v squared of t divided by rl dt, right? Does that make sense? And it's actually, what did we call our our V, we want to put the triangle wave in. What was it, VTR or something? Let's see. Okay, so T sub R of T, I guess we called it, right? So T sub R of T is what I want for the V. And what we're going to do is run T sub R of T through this 1 over 1 plus J omega over z omega 0. So let me change that V to a T sub R, the triangle. T sub R, that's the voltage from the triangle wave. And I want to integrate over one period here, right? Does that make sense? Okay, so I'm going to write this as 1 over t, the integral from 0 to t of the summation n equals minus infinity to infinity of, okay, what were the coefficients of the triangle wave? Okay, where's my mouse? I don't see it. Oh, there it is. It was, actually, we don't want the triangle wave. We want the output of the filter, right? So I don't know why I'm putting triangle wave in here, because we filtered the triangle wave, right? So I don't know. I'm going to call it V out of t squared. And what is V out of t? Here's t sub r of t, right? And then here it is. It's S sub I. We called it S sub I of t last time, right? It's supposed to be a sine wave. So I'll change this V out to an S sub I now that I got the right thing. S sub I of t squared. Now, I'm going to call this S sub I of t, okay? It's supposed to be the sine wave. And you see there's a number in front of the e to the j omega t, right? You see that number? That's actually the Fourier series coefficient for this is a Fourier series right here, right? And I'm going to call that coefficient alpha sub n. So alpha sub n, I could write in what is alpha sub n. Alpha sub n is defined as, it was the C sub n over j omega sub n, and then I had a 1 plus j omega sub n over omega 0, like that, right? That's what I've got right here, right? So that's the C sub n. So I'm just going to call that an alpha sub n there. I guess that's alpha sub n. And we've got e to the j omega sub n t, and then I have to multiply it by itself, right? And the trick here is don't use n again. Use m, because this n means for this series and not for that one, right? So let's make this an m equals minus infinity, and I've got alpha sub m e to the j 2 pi m t over cap t, or actually it's just omega sub m, I'll call it omega sub m t, j omega sub m t. And now when we do this, you see, this guy right here is the magnitude squared of Si of t, right? So I'm going to change and make this a complex conjugate so that, you know, when you multiply something by its complex conjugate, it's actually it's the magnitude of that thing squared. But these guys are both real. So actually, the complex conjugate of this guy, you know, when you take the complex conjugate, nothing happens, actually, right? But it actually makes my work a little bit easier to do that, okay? I don't have to switch the order of the summations, is essentially what it does for me. So anyway, I've got this. Then I need to put an RL. I'll put that on the bottom here. And I've got to put a DT here, right? And so now, the next thing, what's the next thing I need to do? P equals, what's the... Yeah, I need to bring this integral all the way inside and the sums on the outside, right? Because that integral is going to turn into this delta function, delta sub mn, right? Mm-hmm. And so I've got 1 over TRL, and then I have the summation over n minus infinity to infinity, and then I'll put the summation over m equals minus infinity to infinity. I guess I could put an alpha sub n in here, and I'm alpha sub m conjugate, and then I've got this integral from 0 to t of e to the j omega sub n minus omega sub m t dt. Did I do that right? Or omega sub member omega sub n equals 2 pi n over cap t, and omega sub m is the same thing with an m instead of an n, right? And so this guy right here, if omega sub n and omega sub m are the same, in other words, n and m are the same, then I'll get e to the j0, and when you integrate that, you get cap t, because e to the j0 is 1. Integrate 1 from 0 to t, you get t. And if n equals m, you get 0. So it's like this. This is that wonderful Kroninger delta function, right? And that thing, when I sum it over m, this goes looking for the nth term, because it's the only one. The nth term is the only one that has any number other than 0 gets multiplied by it. So when this sum then disappears, it melts into one term, just the nth term, and I end up with this thing right here, 1 over TRL, and then I've got the sum of n equals minus infinity to infinity of alpha sub n times alpha sub m, alpha sub n conjugate, and this guy right here is just the magnitude of alpha sub n squared, right? On the t on top. Yeah, so the t's cancel, right? And so then I ended up with this thing, okay? So this is the average power. The total, this is the total, right? Because that's everything. Now if you look at that, it looks like there's a power associated with each different n, right? It would just be this 1 over RL times the magnitude of alpha sub n squared, right? So when I'm going to look at my harmonic distortion, it's going to be equal to P total, which is this summation. I'll put a, well, notice what's going to happen to the RL. This guy's going to have an RL on the bottom, and so is the bottom going to have an RL on the bottom. So the RL's going to go away, so I can just forget him, right? So I'm just going to have the summation n equals minus infinity to infinity of alpha sub n magnitude squared minus, and the power in the fundamental is only going to be a one term. It's just going to be the, well, it's going to be two terms, the n equals 1 and the n equals minus 1, right? So this will be minus alpha sub 1 squared minus alpha sub minus 1 squared, right? Is that okay? Okay, so why do we have 1 and minus 1? Okay, let's look back at our series. I guess it's over here. Let's go back. It's like right here. Here's our series. So the fundamental term is the one that has the cosine and the sine of 2 pi n, or 2 pi t over little t over cap t, right? That would be where n equals 1 here and where n equals minus 1, because you see e to the plus j theta plus e to the minus j theta is equal to 2 cosine, right? And e to the j theta, whether it's a plus or minus j here, I'm going to get a sine and a cosine of that same frequency, right? In other words, if I wrote e to the j 2 pi t over cap t, that's equal to cosine of 2 pi t over cap t plus j sine of 2 pi t over cap t, right? And if I did e to the minus j 2 pi t over cap t, I get the same thing right here, but I get a minus j and then that thing right there instead. And see, both of these have the right frequency in them, right? But any other n would be at a different frequency, right? So I put these two terms together, the one with plus and the one with minus, because they both come with that same frequency, the fundamental frequency, this n equals 1 term, okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I understand for 1, but I mean,
why negative 1, right? Because it's at the same frequency. In other words, this minus 1, this is like minus 1 right here, right? It has the same frequency as that guy right there, on the same frequency. Okay, so we got rid of those two, subtracted those two out. Those are minus the fundamental, and then we did the power in the fundamental, right? Which was this guy right here, n equals minus infinity to infinity of alpha sub n squared, right? Oh, yeah, just the alpha ones. I'm sorry, we did the whole thing again. Thank you. Yeah, we didn't need the whole sum, just the alpha 1. So alpha 1 squared plus alpha sub minus 1 squared. And by the way, alpha sub 1 and alpha sub minus 1 are related, right? See, because if you look at alpha sub 1, where is it? It's related here to C sub 1, right? And let's look at C sub 1. If I changed 1 to minus 1, the n goes to minus 1 here, what do I get? I get the complex conjugate of it, right? And so C sub minus 1 is the complex conjugate of C sub plus 1. And if you take the magnitude of the complex conjugate, you get the same thing as the magnitude of that thing, right? Because A minus JB, if you square A and minus B, add them together, you get the same thing as A squared plus B squared, right? Mm-hmm. So complex conjugate and the regular thing have the same. So really, this is like minus 2 magnitude of alpha sub 1, if you want, right? But we don't have to do that. We could leave it in like this if you want, okay? So now what we need to do is we just need to go and compute this in MATLAB or Octave and see what we get, right, for, you know, 50 terms or whatever, right?
Well, what's the, that we need to know? Have we figured out C sub N yet?
Yeah, we did. We figured out C sub N last day, and, you know, we had this nice plot here. And we did, we actually...
That's common, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to, it's it kind of is going to come. It's common here and here, but it, you know, over here it's got this plus a whole bunch of other stuff, right? So the kind of wave which you put into the thing does make a difference, right?
Yeah.
If it canceled out somehow, it wouldn't matter if it was the square or the triangle, and it certainly does matter whether it's the square or the triangle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to Octave and see if we can make this work here. So, can you guys read that, or should I make it bigger? Maybe I should make it bigger here. Did I?
Oh, I was just wondering about P equals 1 over T integral of well, just squared over R.
Right.
How
did I get that?
Yeah.
Okay, this is just P of T.
Uh-huh.
That means that's the power as a function of time, right? And if I take something as a function of time and I integrate it over one period, and then I divide by the period, that'll give me the average height, right? In other words, this is kind of like the Fourier coefficient for this periodic function, the zeroth Fourier coefficient, the DC term. It's the average. In other words, if I have, let me draw you a picture here. If I have a function like this, say it's like that, right? And it's periodic, right? So it goes from here to here, and it keeps going like that. Here's 0, here's t, okay? So if I take the area underneath that guy, that's the integral. That's the integral of that guy. And then I divide it by this distance right here, which is capital T, right? That would give me an average height, wouldn't it? That's what I'm doing right here. And that's also the zeroth Fourier series coefficient. It's actually, if you went back to the thing and looked at C sub 0, that's how we got it. It would have been the integral 1 over t, and then there would have been just the function there, right? Because e to the j 0 is 1. So that's why we did this. Are there other questions?
Yeah.
That was good you asked that, because I'm sure somebody else was wondering about that too.
Voltage times current.
Right? Yeah, this is voltage times current, which is V squared over R. That's current is voltage over resistance, right?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
So your SI function is your shorthand notation.
It's the quote sine wave. It didn't turn out to be exactly a sine wave. It's a filtered triangle wave, actually, right?
Mm-hmm. So whenever someone asks you to find the average power of like a volt, and you have the curve of a voltage, then you just
do this, yeah. If it's a periodic thing.
Yeah.
If it's not periodic, I might have to go minus infinity to infinity and divide by infinity or something, right? Or take the limit as t gets really big. But, yeah. And the interesting thing about this is, notice this is 1 over RL. It's like at least proportional to 1 over RL SI dot SI, right? And notice when you come down here, this is just the same kind of thing. This is a dot product in the new coordinate system. I take the nth component times the complex conjugate of the nth component, right? And I sum over all possible n's, all the different directions, right? So this is just a dot product just as well, right? So that's kind of nice that you can now think of average power as an inner product of functions. So anyway, let's go look at this program here so we can understand what was going on here. I don't think last time I got to explain this at all here. There really wasn't much to this. I should have probably worked on this a little bit over the weekend, but I forgot all about it. So anyway, we first of all clear all, okay?
Yep.
That's actually a good idea to put that in your program to start with. Why is that? Well, let me tell you. I'll tell you a little story about what caused me to lose a little time, okay? So I had this thing, I had m equal 50 to start out with, right? And so, you know, I did my calculation or whatever and had some error in here somewhere and I fixed it, right? And somewhere along the line I decided, well, shoot, m equals 50 is a lot of terms and I'm tired of waiting for this thing and I want to just look at just a few of those, so I changed it down to a small number, probably even less than 10, I don't remember. But, you know, I had run this thing, and it had 50 terms on there, right? And so then when I came down here, I did this sum here. This sum thing just takes all the whole vector, whatever it is, and adds up all the numbers in it, right? And so, you know, I was only now using, you know, these first few terms, but I still had all this other stuff from before, right? So anyway, moral of the story, good idea to just... clear all at the beginning, okay? So anyway, don't do the same thing I did. Okay, so I started omega zero. I just picked 2 pi over t. Now that's the cutoff frequency of this low pass filter, okay? I just picked that, and we'll need to sweep that here now in a minute, okay? So we'll need to put a for loop here and then do this whole program a few times to see what it looks like at different setups, right? Okay, so anyway, then I had s equals 0 is the size of t. I just made a t vector here, went from 0. I did it by 4 periods, and I stepped a hundredth of a period each time. So that's actually quite a lot of points, you know, 400 points or something. So I said s was the size, a vector 0 is the size of t, and I said tr was equal to s, and si was equal to s. So basically, I just got a whole bunch of zeros, 400, and I'm going to start with my zeros as my sum, right? And you guys have all done this before. So we do this, n goes minus m to m, okay? I said omega sub n is 2 pi n over cap t. And then I had to put in a special thing here for n equals 0 because otherwise, if you look at the n equals 0 term, it divides by n and you've got a divide by 0 error and so you need to take care of that. And so I took care of that right here, okay? And I had to take care of it for all three of them. And if you got 0 and you divide, it turns out it's a 0, but in the formula it says something also divide by n, and so it'll give you a grief. So I just put them all to 0 here. And then else, if it's not n equals 0, then here's what it was, okay? Now, notice this says cs sub n plus m plus 1, okay? Now, why did I have to do that? Well, octave, you can't have negative subscripts. I really want to go from n equals minus m up to m, right? In fact, that's what I'm doing right here in this for loop here, right? But octave will not allow subscripts that are negative, okay? So it starts out with a subscript equal 1. Now C starts out with subscript equal 0. So you got to kind of juggle these things, okay? So I just added m plus 1. So that starts out with 1 when n equals minus m, right? So whenever you see a C sub n plus 1, that's really a C sub n, okay? Over here. And we had to do that to please octave or MATLAB. Okay, so then we said, okay, after you've computed the C's, and these are just the C's we talked about. Here's the 1 plus cosine pi n over j pi n. This is the divide by 0 problem I was telling you about. But it's really 0 divide by 0 because cosine of 0 is 0, right? So 1 minus 1 over 0 kind of thing, right? And so that's why we came up here. If you just look at the integral and do the integral, a special case for n equals 0, you come up with 0. Okay, so anyway, then we did took this coefficient, we divided by j omega sub n, right? That's the triangle wave, supposedly, right? And then the last one, we took that c sub t right here, and we divided by 1 plus j omega sub n over omega sub 0, right? That's not any big deal, right?
Any reason to use a vector divide on that
one? I didn't need a vector divide, but I was starting to do a vector up here with omega 0 so I could have a two-dimensional vector, but then I decided, well, that's a little bit complicated, but I never took the dot divides out. But dot divide works just as well as other kind of divide, because if it's a one-by-one, an element-by-element is the same thing as a scalar, yeah. So I left that like that. So anyway, then I said s equals what I had before plus the coefficient times e to the j omega nt. Well, that's what it is for all three sums, so I just computed them all there. And we ran through this thing here 2m plus 1 times, okay? So this is an approximate thing. And then we plotted it here. T, real part of S, T, real part of TR, and T, real part of SI. Now, why did I put real part in there? It should be real, right? But I'm adding all this, you know, these terms here, which are complex, right? So it's going to end up with a very small imaginary part. And if I was worried that I'd made an error here, I'm not really worried that I made an error here because I plotted it and it looked right, okay? But you could look at the max of the imaginary part of each of these vectors right here, and you would find out that it's, you know, something times 10 to the minus something. It's very small, right? And that's because when you do real computations with finite precision arithmetic, you'll end up with something not exactly zero. Now, in real life, it does exactly cancel out and become all real, right? So I plotted the real part here. And the reason you have to say real part is because when you try and plot a complex number as a function of t, it doesn't quite know how to do that. And so what it will do is it will actually plot for each t, it will put the complex plane on there and give you some kind of loci on the complex plane, okay? Which is not what I want. I want to see a real regular t-axis and the f of t kind of thing here, right? So that's why we did that. Then I put the legend on here. I plotted s first, so that's the square, tr first, the second, so that's the triangle, and the sine question mark third, right? I mean, supposed to be sine, but it's probably not going to be quite right. And now we compute the harmonic distortion, and this is where I got to check and see whether we did this right, because, you know, I hadn't actually worked out the stuff. I just kind of guessed at what I thought it was going to be. So let's see if I did this right. Okay, so CSI is actually what I called the alpha sub n's there, right? So I took the sum of the absolute value of CSI squared, okay? So that's this term right here, the sum. Sum in octave takes adds up all the elements of your matrix, right? And I made a matrix here, CSI, this matrix right here, is 2m plus 1 long, right? Okay, so I've got CSI squared, and then I subtracted twice the absolute value of CSI, and then I had to put m plus 2. Now, m plus 2. which should give me just C sub 1, right? And what I was using was that this guy right here is actually equal to that guy. So I just subtracted 2 of this guy, okay? So I subtracted 2 of that guy, and then I divided by 2 of this guy right here, right? 2 of those guys right there, the squared thing. Then I multiplied the whole thing by 100. So that, I think that looks okay. Is that all right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's run this thing and see what it looks like so we can see if we're getting the right answer. And I think we kind of did this last day, but let's just make sure it still works. And then we'll need to sweep omega 0, right? Okay, so I think I've got it started over here, octave. So this is TR2 sine. Okay, so here's our plot. Now one thing you ought to notice on this plot, look how bad the square wave looks, right? Look how good the triangle wave looks. Isn't that interesting? Now why is that? Can you tell me? Right, it's because we divided by 1 over j omega sub n, right? And so that means the higher terms are getting attenuated more, right? This is like a low-pass filter with a cutoff frequency of 0, you know, and so this is, it's, you don't need so many terms when you're doing a triangle wave, right? It's just like Joe said, it's more close to a sine. It's not so far out, right? So it looks really good. And so then the red thing, which is the filtered one of those guys, you know, that looks okay. Now, what I would like to do is we'll just go and we'll fix this thing and step it through, I don't know, maybe 10 values or something.
Where did it print omega 0?
Oh, it should be on my, let me look, it should have printed that out at the bottom right over here. It says distortion is 0.21 or 0.26126%. So you see, that doesn't look too much like a sine wave, but it's 0.2% distortion, right? So when you go buy yourself a stereo, you can say, well, man, 0.2%, this seems really good, but it's not very good, right? Because that red thing doesn't look too close to a sine wave to me. I mean, I can tell it's not a sine wave just with my eyeball easily, right? So now let's go back and modify this guy. And we'll do a 4 here. OR 4 omega 0 equals, and we'll start out. What shall I do? I'm almost tempted rather than do a 4 just to plug in some omega zeros here. Let's try omega 0. We just tried it at right at the cutoff frequency. Let's try it at half that. Okay? Remember that number 0.26 whatever, right? Let's see what we get with this. 0.26126. Okay, here we go. Ah, 0.17605. It's better, right? Whoops, where's my... Yeah, it's looking better. It's better, right? Well, so if that was better, let's go even smaller. Let's make it 0.1, right? How's that? So this will be 1/20. It's going to get pretty small to see here, but we'll see what the distortion is. Point 1449. It's getting better. And of course, you can hardly see the sine wave there, but the distortion, the harmonic distortion, is better by a little bit, right?
The harmonic distortion should just be a single value.
Yeah, it is just a single value. It's just this number over here, right? I mean, when you sum up all those things, you only get one number, right? So let's put in, we put in 0.1, let's put in 0.0001, okay? And now let's see what happens. Oops. You'll probably hardly be able to see the sine wave now, right? Because it's going to filter everything out. And the answer is, it didn't get much better, right? 0.14461, right? I mean, versus 0.14494. Oh well, right? It's asymptotically approaching 0.144 something or other, probably, huh?
On the graph, it looks like it's like right at zero, though.
Yeah, that's right. That you can see as I bring the cutoff frequency down, it's making the it's attenuating the sine wave, right? But the distortion is getting better because the distortion is the ratio between this guy and that guy right there, right?
Or like, I'm just trying to grab this. Like, if you're talking about like an audio signal of some kind where you should actually hear it, would that mean like at lower volumes?
Yes. That would be lower volumes. Volume. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'd have to. Maybe we'd have to, I could multiply this thing up. In real life, what I would do is my transfer function on the actual circuit, on the low-pass filter, there's a term, minus RF over R1 or something, that I can multiply and actually blow this thing up, this red curve up. So if I was to do that, I can do that in MATLAB just by multiplying by a number. So I'm going to multiply, I'll just make the thing here 100 times, right? So let's just save that, and this is like I'm multiplying it by 100. Oh, it wasn't enough. Let me do 1,000. Okay. That's what we need to do by tweak and peak, right? Tweak and fiddle. Okay, so here we go. Ah, there it is. And that looks much closer to a sine wave, doesn't it? And that's what that distortion was telling us, right? So are there any questions about this? Does this make sense to you guys?
Putting through a filter is limiting your frequency, and you're only picking up certain frequencies, right?
So well, the filter is knocking out certain,
right.
it's dropping off as 1 over omega, kind of, right?
Yeah, killing all your higher range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is cleaner than it would have been if I put the cutoff frequency back at the same, you know, which is a little bit counterintuitive. But what it means is that if you're on the part of the low pass filter, if you put your cutoff frequency right near zero, it would be better to do two integrators, to do the double integral, right? Because 1 over j omega, that would be a low-pass filter with a cutoff frequency of 0, right? So it would be better to do two integrators if you wanted the best harmonic distortion, right? Than it would be to actually have this low-pass filter with a, you know, place where it actually starts passing DC, right? I mean, but, you know...
two integrators will get you the sawtooth.
Well... The first integrator gives you the sawtooth, the second integrator should give you the triangle, or the thing, which would actually, what?
Well, not this, I mean, if you integrate the triangle wave,
you're going to get a quadratic wave,
yeah.
Right?
And
that quadratic wave has less harmonic distortion than any of these other ones where I have a cutoff frequency up higher.
Okay, so we're not actually looking to make a sign.
We're trying to make a sign, but this is the best. We can't make a sign with just this low-pass filter. It won't work, right?
If you use the two integrators, would you have a phase shift?
Yeah, you would. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it would look very close to this. I mean, you see right here where this is coming down like this? This is a parabola right there, right? And this part right here is a parabola going up. And this is a parabola going down and a parabola going up. And that's closer to a sine wave. It even looks closer to our eye than the original thing where we had a cutoff frequency right at the you know, same frequency as the yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which means that on these there's actually a straight portion where there isn't a straight portion on the sine wave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's better to be, yeah. So I don't know, does that make sense to you guys now? Can you see how, you know, you can use all this theory for something that's, I mean, what we did in lab, actually, we just changed capacitors, kind of like I was doing here with the omega zero. Did this a couple times. Ah, much better down here, you know. But, I mean, we first started out exactly like we did with the same cutoff frequency. We want to you know, we'll put the cutoff frequency right at the fundamental. So it should pass the fundamental and knock out all those harmonics, right? Well, you know, looking at it, actually an integrator would be better. So that's that. Okay, we better go on to Laplace transform properties. Any questions on this before we go on?
We only have a minute.
I know, but we can do in 1 minute, we can do at least one property. Okay, so what I want to find is the limit as t goes to 0 or infinity of f of t. And I want to get that in terms of f of s, some function of f of s, okay? Now, we had this thing which said the Laplace transform, I'll just write it like this, I guess, 0 to infinity. This is the Laplace transform of df dt was equal to, well, it's just going to be df dt e to the minus st dt. Is that okay? And that should be, according to our derivation before, we had this was s, f of s, minus f at 0, minus. That was the derivative property, right? Now, assuming that I can take the limit of this thing right here and bring the limit inside the integral, that's one of those changing the limiting operations. It's a little risky, but assuming we can do that, if we have all the right convergence, we can take the limit as, now let's see, if I took the limit as s went to infinity, then what would happen to this whole thing right here? E to the minus infinity would be 0, right? And then this is the limit as t goes to 0 of f of t, right? So if I take the limit as s goes to infinity of that ditto, it equals 0, which equals s, I got to do the limit over here, right? Limit s goes to infinity of s f of s, and then this is minus f of 0, right? So that's the limit of that is just f of 0. So that says the limit as s goes to infinity, infinity of s f of s equals the limit t goes to 0 of f of t. Okay, now let's do the other one. The limit as s goes to 0. If I take the limit as s goes to 0, I get e to the 0, which is 1 here, right? Now then, if you use fundamental theorem of calculus, if you integrate df dt with respect to t, you just get f at the upper limit minus f at the lower limit. So limit as s goes to 0 of Laplace transform of df dt equals, well, it'll be the integral from 0 to infinity df dt dt, which equals f of infinity minus f of 0, and then that has to equal the limit on the right side. So limit as s goes to 0 of s f of s minus f of 0, like that, right? So now if we add f of 0 to both sides of the equation, we get a limit as s goes to 0 of s f of s equals f of infinity, which is the limit as t goes to infinity of f of t. So this tells you what the final value is. If you're in the s coordinate system, you can just multiply by s and take the limit as s goes to 0. Okay? And if you want to find the initial value of the function, what you can do is multiply by s, take your f of s, multiply by s, and then take the limit as s goes to infinity. So those are the two n conditions. So this is called the initial and final value theorem, and my apologies for going too fast there. Is that okay? at least it's okay with Joe. Everybody else is kind of like, oh, well, maybe.
That would be in the standard ODE textbook, right?
It's also in your textbook.
Well, I have both up
yeah,
here
right.
with me.
Yeah. So I know it's in the textbook for the class, okay? It was the same thing I just did there. And it probably is in the ODE textbook. I don't know. I haven't looked there.